I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I'm Amy Frost and my guest today is Amanda Renoir. She's not only the owner of the VIP, the very important pad, which is a saddle pad used by top riders all over the country, but she also owns her own stud and has been chef to keep for the Irish dressage team. So she's got lots to talk to us about. I hope you enjoy listening to her journey. This is Horse Hour. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I've been so excited about my guest today, somebody that I met quite a few years ago without realising how incredible she is in our industry. Her name is Amanda Renoir. And when I tell you some of the names that Amanda's worked with, she's worked with Sam Griffiths, she's worked with Roland Tong, Bert Sheffield, but more importantly, she was chef to keep for the Ireland team and the 2018 Equestrian Games, along with launching her own range of VIP saddle pads and having a stud. I don't know how you have the time. Amanda, how are you?
I drink a lot of coffee.
I thought you were going to say something else then. I drink a lot of gin.
No, caffeine is my mantra. I gave it up once for Lent. Never ever do that ever again.
It's so nice to speak to you. Thank you for joining us on the Horse Hour podcast. We were trying to work out the last time that we actually spoke to each other. It was randomly, wasn't it, during the Rio 2000 and, oh gosh, what was it? 2015 Olympics? Was it 2016 Olympics? I can't keep up.
2016 Games. And I think I wanted some photographs of Sam Griffiths, but also of my husband, who was the equestrian manager for Rio. And he's one of these people that you never ever see at these things. He makes competitions and shows and events happen, but he's very sneaky and is never seen in front of a camera. I think you failed on that one.
Oh, did I not manage to get a photo? No, because we had a photographer. I was so excited that year. It was the first year that we'd actually had a photographer at an Olympics. Yeah. And Stephen, your husband, let's explain what he does. He's an international event planning and management consultant. So it's just incredible that this man can create so many amazing events. You're working all over the world, but how do you cope? Because it means that he's away all the time.
Perfect relationship. No, to be fair, it's always been the same. We've been married 23 years and we do see a lot of each other when we're, you know, because I'm actually looking at his desk right now, and when we're at home we do work together a lot. It's just life.
It is. And I guess my husband works away as well. And I love the fact that he's home when he's home. But it is quite all consuming, isn't it? Especially if you have the same kind of career and that you're both in the equestrian industry. So he's just, I mean, we're talking small level. I've only just managed to allow him to hay the horses by himself now. But, you know, he enjoys the horses. And so that means that we are together a lot. Are there elements, I feel that there's a lot of crossover sometimes with learning each other's craft. And so do you find that you benefit from some of his experience? Because he's an FEI course designer on top of, you know, in creating these huge events.
I think the biggest thing that I've learned with Stephen is attention to detail. And it's amazing, his attention to detail and his capacity for seeing a bigger picture is something that is very instinctive for him and I've had to learn. But we often talk, I mean, with what I do, and we often talk about collaboration and from a organizer's perspective what he's expecting from sponsorship and what he's expecting from athletes. And so it's always very useful. I get a good insight from what he's expecting.
So together then, you're a pretty dynamic duo. You have the AR, PR and marketing solutions company, which I'm presuming is when you're working with people like Sam Griffiths and you're helping people to, brands and businesses to get sponsorship. But then the rest of the time, you also have a stud. So how did that come about?
Well, I'm actually phoning right now from my stud in France. We live in France. We've been here 11 years. Our offices are a converted goat barn. Yes, literally. It's a labor of love, this place. I'm looking at where our vineyard was. It's not a vineyard now. We ripped it out because the wine tasted terrible. About 10 years ago, we'd been here for a while, and a very good friend of mine decided to move to Australia for lots of reasons. And so I took over all of her horses, and all of the horses included 5 very lovely brood mares. And it's sort of developed from there. And I think with only having 5 brood mares, we can manage that ourselves with sort of half a person a week who also comes in and helps.
Oh goodness, it sounds like a dream. It sounds very romantic. In you know, you're in France and it's beautiful, you're in a vineyard, but I know the reality of having a foal because I have a yearling, and oh my goodness, it's hell.
Yes. It's not hell, I think.
It is if you have my colts. So maybe if you have wonderful broodmares that are good and they pop out some lovely angelic horses. But I literally have the devil. And I had this wonderful idea that I was going to have a stud at some point. And now I've decided, no, I'm going to leave it to the experts, because my little monkey is that exactly that, is a very tricky colt.
Oh, well, I think you can't. I think the thing is that a lot of them, when they are yearlings, they can be quite mischievous, but you know that once you get them under saddle, they're going to be really good. And then equally, the really quiet ones as yearlings, they can be really naughty when you first put them under saddle. They're just characters. And I think the more you have and the more you breed, the more you can read how they're going to be later on in life. Which is quite sweet.
Yeah, they're like children really, aren't they? You never know what you're going to get.
They are my children. My fur babies, my little fur babies. Yes, it is a very romantic notion of what we're doing, but the reality is we work 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. And yes, we don't have a bad commute because it's here. It's currently lovely and sunny, and I'm in the middle of nowhere, miles from anybody else, and I love that. Love that opportunity, and we have wonderful countryside, but it is very hard. I think always having animals is very hard, and also you get the sad opportunities, the sad bits as well as the good bits.
Yeah, and it's a lot of pressure as well. I think, you know, after having the horses at home, I realize how much I'm thinking about them 24/7. You can't really shut that off. Whereas when I would visit them in an awful kind of way, it would pop them in a box and I'd concentrate on work, and that was it. But when you're living in that environment, and when you're breeding, and you know, your whole life is horses and equestrianism, with animals particularly, I think you do become pretty obsessed, but in a good way.
Yeah, you do become obsessed. Oh my goodness, look, there's a rain cloud. Oh my goodness, there's a bit of sun. And here we have additional things like ticks, snakes, hornets, and frelon asiatique, which are the really big monster hornets. So you then panic about all of those things as well. But having been here 11 years now, I'm a bit calmer. Oh, the other delicious thing that we have here are sanglier, which is the wild pigs.
Oh, no.
And we see them charging across the field sometimes, which are quite exciting.
So is it true, Amanda, this is a myth I heard quite a long time ago, that that horses are afraid of the pigs because of the warthogs from years ago used to eat the horses? So naturally, their natural instinct is to run away from them.
I don't know. To be fair to the wild boar,
is a warthog a wild boar, or is that just something from the Lion King?
So they kind of look possibly still from the Lion King, but they can be big. I have been out hacking with my son on his little 11-hand pony, and the wild boar, when they're fully grown, are not much smaller than the 11-hand pony. Equally, the little piglets look like little black Staffordshire terriers, so they're super cute. But I don't think the horses are scared of them. They seem to be more scared of us. But it's the smell. When you ride through a forest and the scent is there, then our horses quite often are on their toes. Mm. And we're really lucky here because we breed dressage horses, but we have completely off-road hacking. So once we've backed everything, they all go hacking and they're tractor-proof and combine harvester proof, but they've never seen a car in their life.
Wow.
Or and a human.
Do you back them yourself, or do you have somebody that does that for
well,
you?
Well, I do back them myself, but you have to remember that those foals, when they were born, I'm the first human being they saw. I'm the first person that put their head collar on. I'm the first person that picked their foot up. I'm the first person that put a rug on them. And I'm the first person that's done everything to them. So one day I put a bridle on them and I prepare them to be backed. And I get on them. And they usually go, okay, mum, that's fine. Hmm. Let's do that. I don't know that I'd want to get on somebody else's three-year-old. Because the three-year-old has no relationship with me. Hmm. And I'm far too old to get broken.
No, well, yeah, that's the fear, isn't it? I think once we start having children, we get a bit older, we think, oh, gosh, we've got too many responsibilities to hurt ourselves. But it's interesting that you say about the relationship, you know, and I totally can understand that they've known you from the first day they were born. So they already have that relationship with you. But I feel that when we're looking at backing horses, it seems like the whole education process at the moment is how quickly can you get a relationship with a horse to be able to back it, which I'm not sure I entirely agree with. I don't think you can get a relationship with a horse in 2 days to then back it by day number three. You know, it takes a long time to build that trust.
You might do it with one, but you're not going to do it with the next 10 that you find. And it just very much depends on the horse. And I think there's a great saying about horses and time, that you either wish you gave the horse time or you give him time. And that's, I think, the best bit of advice anybody can take when they first start with a horse. It's a little bit like I rescued a dachshund this weekend. It's a rescue dachshund. And he just needs time. He'll be fine, but he just needs me to ignore him for a few days, let him get comfortable in this house. And then one day he'll say, hello, mum, and that'll be it. And I think it's the same with horses. Mm. I sound really emotive there, don't I?
No, it's beautiful. It's lovely. No, I totally agree with you. Could I take you back to the moment that you first had a foal? Because I think that first experience is such a learning curve for us. And particularly, I'm talking about that because I'm going through it at the moment. And I had my troublesome colt. I like to say that he's troublesome. He's actually not. He's a sweetie and he's really mischievous. And I thought I had, about 3 weeks ago, I thought I had the worst possible colt yearling ever that was going to kill me and everybody around it because he'd become a little mini stallion. And so obviously I'm now looking at the time to get him gelded, but I have to wait for that, for the vets to be able to come and do it. So in the meantime, I was quite surprised with how his mannerisms have changed in such a short period of time. So he went from being this lovely, calm, relaxed colt to being a stallion every day, rearing, bucking, biting, kicking, wouldn't let anybody near him. And then within another 2 weeks, he's now back to being quite relaxed. So I'd like to go to take you back to when you had your first yearling or your first baby foal. And what is it that you'd learned from that experience, apart from everything, because I know we learn so much, but what really could you take away from that now, as an experienced breeder, you would tell yourself then?
Oh, that's a really tricky one. They need company and they need to learn from a horse. And the first year, I'm trying to remember, I think I had three colts and a filly. Yeah, I had three colts and a filly. And the three colts I could have sold tickets instead of going to some weird people going to dog fighting, that awful thing. But they could come and watch my foals scrapping constantly and me thinking that they were completely abnormal. And then you'd look at the fillies and the fillies would be calmly grazing and batting their eyelashes and looking beautiful. And the boys, we ended up, a friend of mine had a very old trotter and we put the old trotter, he didn't have shoes on, in with the delinquents. And he sorted them out. And he sorted them out by swearing at them, I promise you. He just glared at them. And they all toed in line. They wouldn't drink until he gave them permission. They wouldn't lay down until he said it was okay. But equally, they did all three lie down. And he stood over them and rested, you know, protected them. And they definitely need an older person to look after them and say, this is how you're going to behave. And it has to be a horse that tells them that. Mm. And the fillies are the same. I've got a filly now that's out with a pony and the pony's teaching that manners because it's a bit of a delinquent as well. There's only so much you can do and all you end up doing is you swear at it and you wave your arms and legs around and you just, the horse just thinks, well, you're very unpleasant. I'm gonna remember this. You know, there's one thing you have to remember about horses is the reason they're so trainable is because they've got really good memories. They have to learn from horses certain things. And I would say manners, the very first stage of manners has to be taught by another horse.
It is fascinating to watch. I mean, I've had times I've been tearing my hair out thinking, oh, why have I done this? And then you have that little moment where you think, oh, you are beautiful. This is why, because actually we are making progress. It's just, it is tiny, tiny, tiny steps and fascinating to watch. You know, I had to take my bigger horse who is very much the, well, he's almost, I think my foal thinks he's his mum. Even though he's a boy, he's got quite confused because his mother was also black. And so he imprinted on my black horse. So he's very much led by Blackjack. And whilst the other horses in the field, he thinks that they're just playthings. You know, he'll bite their bottoms, he'll rip their rugs. He's ripped so many head. His new game is to see if he can get the fly mask off the other horse, which he finds quite fun.
Excellent.
So we've had a few broken fly masks. But it was interesting. When I took Blackjack out, I had to take him out for a while because he didn't need that much grass. And the colt just went, well, ran wild. He was like a teenager at home having a house party. And the other horse just needed a break. So I put Blackjack back in there. And that was actually, it's interesting you say that because that was the time that he settled down again. And he said, oh, mum's home or dad's home. Yeah. You know, I've got to do what I'm told now. So, well, let's move on then because you have had such an interesting career. How did you go from, you know, doing marketing and PR to becoming the chef to keep for the Irish team? Or was it the other way around? Did you become chef to keep first and then do marketing and PR?
No, I did marketing and PR. I originally worked for a company that I'm sure all of you have heard of called Dodson and Horrell. I was a rep on the road driving a car and I drove all over the countryside, mostly talking to some very lovely people and some very famous people. And with Stephen being a course designer, I was meeting some pretty smart athletes, and then suddenly a few of those people started asking me whether I would help them with some of their work, some of their social media that was starting. And I then went and worked for Denji, and the sort of PR-y side of things was a bit of a hobby and a compliment to be talking to these famous people. And then one day I thought, hang on a minute, I can make a career out of this, and it means I can stay at home, because working, you know, being a rep on the road, you do travel a lot, and eventually you do get very tired of being in a car 24/7. And so that's how it all started. And I also did quite a lot of PR for shows and a lot of sponsorship liaison for shows as well, and then doing some PR for commercial enterprises. And then really started to focus on athlete representation and, you know, getting the best for those guys so that when they go to some of their big competitions, that's all they have to worry about. And that's how that started. And the chef to keep for 2014 World Equestrian Games really came about because I saw an advert in Eurodressage or something like that. And it was literally a 6-week posting. It was a honorary position. And I just thought, oh, that looks quite fun. I could do that. And was really surprised when I got the job, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was really being a chef to keep, especially when you're just talking to people, you know, you're meeting people for the very first time. It's just about managing their expectations and their experience at a competition. So you're making their life as easy as possible. It's not about saying to them, oh, when you get to X, you have to do this. And, you know, when you do this, you've got to go for 85%. It wasn't anything like that for the level that I was at. And it was a very enjoyable thing to do. And I suddenly realized that, you know, I'd like to do it again. And I was very fortunate that I had the opportunity last year to work with the Irish squads again in a very similar role.
I have a feeling, Amanda, that you're being extremely humble. And I should imagine that the role is probably a lot more intense than you're telling us. And because you are lovely and you won't tell us, you know, the truths about what you have actually done in your life. I can't believe it's taken me 2 years to get this out of you. So tell me, you know, your day-to-day role when you took on the chef to keep role, what was it that you'd have to do?
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Day to day, it would be finding international Irish athletes, which was very interesting. And the wonderful thing about the Irish squads is their enthusiasm. And there is an awful lot of talent out there, just desperate to get out there. And a lot of the problem for the Irish has been that they've got two seas to cross to get to the international competitions a lot of the time. So they're very resilient characters. And I think it was a very interesting year where we were putting budgets together to take forward and to support those up and coming international athletes and also to give them confidence, even down to, I went to one competition and I said, I'm really sorry, but you can't plait like that. It looks really wrong. This is how you have to plait and we need to change this and we need to change, you know, just little presentation things, which for the very first time when you're going to an international competition, perhaps you wouldn't know, particularly if you haven't had the fortunate, you know, opportunity to go to the background side of things at a competition where you will see horses being platted and presented for trot-ups and for international competition.
Well, exactly. There's no rule book, is there? It's not like somebody comes along and says, right, you've got to do this, 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 and this. Most of us walk around competitions feeling like school kids, completely confused. In fact, I relate it to my first day at university where I spent the whole time lost. And I think I only lasted 3 months at university because I was permanently lost. And I see the same at competitions. It's just people, mums, kids, adults, horses, grooms, just looking lost all the time.
And what you have to remember is when you go to your first international competition, an awful lot of people are taking their mums and their friends to groom for them and be drivers and stuff. They haven't got these wonderful professional grooms who will make these horses look absolutely amazing. And so it just helps when somebody says to them, oh, maybe you should do this, or, you know, here's some show shine and put that on the horse and you'll find that the quarter markers look better and all that sort of stuff. So it was a bigger role than making sure they got to that centre line and halted at X.
And so did you have a support team there to help you with that?
No, we were very small. We had a very small support team. We had a physiotherapist. We had a vet. Obviously, we've got team vets. And then obviously all the wonderful backup management team who were based at Horsesport Ireland.
So when you look at that then, you're very kind, Amanda, you've been really honest, thank you. When you look at the small team that the Irish team had, and then you look at how many competitors are doing incredibly well at the moment, like, I hope I get to say his name right, Cara O'Brien?
Yeah, they're eventers. They have a bigger team. I just looked after the dressage. So the eventers are very successful in their own right, whereas for Ireland, they were emerging talent. And of course, there is no bigger emerging talent, well, not even emerging anymore, in Judy Reynolds, who has been at the forefront of international dressage. She's been to an Olympics. She's been to the last two World Games. And, you know, lots of World Cups and things like that. And she's done fantastically well and is based in Germany, has made that sacrifice to go to Germany and, you know, get in there with the big boys and is certainly holding her own. She's somebody who's, you know, has become an inspiration to so many athletes based in, you know, pony clubbers learning to do their walk trot tests. And they're now thinking, okay, well, maybe I want to do more than a walk-trot test. I want to go on pony teams. I want to go on the under-25s. And so you just need those couple of people that are going to inspire you. And that was really exciting to be a little bit part of that.
And Adler, just love the fact, what, you know, that you found a job online and you thought, oh, I'm just going to go for it. How amazing. You know, obviously you've got the experience to back it up. But it just goes to show that, you know, you've just got to bite the bullet, haven't you? And just go for things.
Well, if you don't ask, you don't get, my theory. It's always been the same. And things like being a chef de keeper at the World Equestrian Games. Yeah, on paper, there were some other people that perhaps are, you know, definitely more qualified than me. But you need to be a people person. You need to be able to organise and you need to know the rules. And you do need to know how international competitions work. And now, luckily for me, having been married to Stephen all this time, I do know how international competitions tick. And so that was a big advantage for me, so that when I got to these big competitions, I wasn't like, oh my goodness, what do I do now? At least that was the easy bit, because I knew about that. It was the
and if not, you could phone him up and say, right, Stephen, come down here now. How do we change this? You know, I've cooked the dinner, I've fed your children, and I've got ironed your clothes. The least you could do is tell me how this works.
Yep. Definitely.
I've thought of your next role, Amanda, as though you don't have enough to do already. But wouldn't it be amazing if you became an author now and wrote us all a book, a little handbook on competition etiquette, on what to do and what not to do?
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
You're welcome.
Could we trademark that right now?
Yeah, can I have 5% of all fees, please? And I need a copy because, like I said, I never know what I'm doing. And people ask me, they expect me to know because of the podcast. And I say, well, no, I've got no idea.
You know, the role you're doing, you have to be a people person. That's what it is.
Okay, so what are you up to at the moment then? How did you go? Because, okay, so you've become chef to keep. I mean, you know, in my view, you can't get much higher than that, really, when you're, you know, working with people at the top of the profession. But I know that you do a lot of starters, you know, of people that are coming through at the beginning of their career as well, don't you? Don't you offer a lot of support to those?
Yeah, I have done in the past, and it's very much at that point, it's getting people to be able to afford to compete internationally, because the entry fees alone are very expensive, and then you've got all the travelling and everything else. And you do need to take a team with you to support you. Very daunting, go to those first competitions on your own. And so it's usually getting somebody to go with a mentor. So, you know, finding a very experienced athlete that perhaps the younger person can travel with or meet with, etc. And that's a very, very important part of that.
I say the most that I ever learned was when I'd go to competitions without horses, it was through Horse Hour, and I'd sit and watch the warm-up arena, and I'd just sit and look at the grooms and how they were getting ready. And sometimes it's worth buying those tickets, taking your horse, just so that you can get into those areas, because you can't get into them as just standard spectators. Whilst if you take a horse, you can, and just sit and watch and learn and take your friend with you who's your groom and just take it all on board. Because in an hour, I learned more.
Do you know what that's called?
What?
Stealing with your eyes. You steal all the tips, the warm-up tips, the preparation tips, the dress code, everything. You can steal so much information. It's the best thing. You'd never go and buy an expensive ticket to go and see a competition. Get the slightly cheaper ticket to go and watch the warm-up, because you'll learn so much.
So in that then, watching all this, being in these environments and seeing what's going on, is that what led you then to creating your own saddle pad? Because quite often we're seeing in our industry particularly that there seems to be a standard strategic move that everybody makes. It goes from owning your own horse to working in the industry to running your own yard to bringing out products, competing. You know, there is a very similar system, I guess. But the market is completely inundated with products. It's not a great market at the moment, with especially over here with Brexit, and you know, the equestrian businesses are struggling. So in order to be really successful, you've got to have an incredibly tight product that is working and is better really than the other things that are on the market. So how did you end up coming up with your VIP pads, which are saddle pads?
Well, I have a very good friend who I met at a livery yard, who we've known each other 25 years or so, and literally Tamara Huddleston is one of these brilliant brains who never stops thinking about the next thing she can invent. And at the time, she was riding on her horse, Mr. Quintus. She was using this wheelchair pad that was put on wheelchairs for quadriplegic people, people who couldn't move, people with pressure sores, all this sort of thing. We never really thought about it. I just thought Tamara was slightly mad using this bizarre thing. Sort of roll forward a few years and we get talking, and we were saying about, you know, these beautiful saddles that are all close contact, beautifully fitted, people spending a fortune on them, and then shoving huge half pads underneath that were a couple of inches thick, really bulky, really heavy, didn't wash well, blah, blah, blah. And Tamara said to me, what about that wheelchair pad? That was an amazing thing. So we literally rifled around in the attic, found it, realized where the gel came from. And we phoned up the manufacturer and said, we want to come and see you. So we flew out and we bought the rights to the equestrian product. And that's how we developed the pad. We didn't want it to be too heavy, and the wheelchair pad was quite heavy. So that's why we did the bobbles. Cleared the gullets, we made the nice shape, and we've deliberately made it very unsexy. It doesn't have any seams, it doesn't have any fluffy pads. The black one, we all say, looks a bit like a bin liner because it's just black and shiny. The gold one is a bit like nude underwear, you know, which you wear under your white shirt. It molds, you can't ever see it. So if you put it with a blue saddle cloth, it sort of takes that color. And then we have a bright blue one as well for people who like matchy-matchy. And that's how the product evolved. It was just a really simple idea, but with a gel quality that has impact protection qualities and doesn't alter saddle fit because it's so thin. And it's a really simple product that, you know, on its own looks very odd, but you know, you put it under a saddle and it really works.
I think all horses need a little, well, my horses certainly need a little bit of protection from my bottom hitting up and down too much. But I do have a question to ask about looking, if you're listening and you'd like more information, then head to vip-equestrian.com and you can see pictures and things. So Amanda, so if I want to use this then, how would you wear this? Would you wear this by itself? Would you wear it with another numbner?
What we tend to recommend is you put your saddle cloth down on the horse's back. You then put the VIP bobbles down, smooth side towards the saddle, and then you pop the saddle on top. And you'll find it doesn't alter saddle fit. And we're not advocating that if you have a saddle that's not fitting that you use a VIP. It's not gonna cure badly fitting saddles. But equally, if you have a beautiful, very expensive, perfectly fitting saddle, all it's going to do is add an additional impact protection and sheer force protection. So when I say by sheer force, if you think of where the tree of the saddle is and what your stirrup bars are attached to, when you're jumping or doing rising trot, all of your weight goes to the stirrup bars. So you have two little areas on either side of the horse's wither that can get quite tender. And with the VIP, that impact protection of you doing just rising trot, never mind doing a 6-foot drop or jumping a hedge or something, it just helps to protect from the impact of your body weight going up and down.
It's interesting because Lara Edwards uses your product, doesn't she? She uses the VIP pad, and she says prior to the pad being available, she used to use sheepskin underneath the saddle, but his skin was really sensitive, so pads would rub. But by using this, the rubbing's gone, which is amazing, and the saddle doesn't slip forward. Yeah. And so because the saddle doesn't slip forward, she's then finding that Felix is much looser through his shoulders, which is a problem that I hear a lot is not only, like you said, it's not going to fix poorly fitted saddles. And we like to presume that most horses have proper fitted saddles. But I do hear a lot that horses are struggling to move their shoulders freely to get a big extended trot, yeah, or even a decent trot. So it's interesting that it helps with that.
And if you go over to our Facebook page, our VIP Equestrian Facebook page, there are lots of people who've sent us in videos of things such as horses with sarcoids where they've not been able to ride their horse. Now, we've never even thought about this, but when you do a pinch test on a horse's neck to see if the horse is dehydrated, you know, we all do it. We grab hold of the horse's skin and just see how that moves. But when you do that test, you can feel the thickness of that skin. Now, that is basically the same width, the depth as the horse, as a VIP. Now, with the horse with the sarcoids, they put the VIP on and it's sort of mimicked. Best way to describe it is it's mimicked like a layer of skin over that sarcoid issue. And the lady has been able to continue to ride the horse whilst that sarcoid has been treated. And also horses with some sores, sorts of thing. It's really, really helped. And it's all been people totally unprompted that sent us their videos, which has been lovely.
Well, the great news is you've been so kind, you're going to provide us with a VIP equestrian pad, which you can win if you're listening today. It's really easy to get involved. Just head to our Facebook page and there's a post there which you have to comment with a picture of your horse and like and tell everyone about VIP saddle pads because we think they're amazing and we would love you to have a chance of winning one. So head over to @horsehour. And also, Amanda, what is your Facebook page called?
VIP Equestrian.
Perfect. And then are you on Twitter and Instagram as well?
We are on Twitter. We are on Instagram. Yes, we are.
Amazing. So follow us. Yeah.
And follow us. There is a crazy video that Tamara put up, which was the biscuit challenge, where we wrapped a biscuit in a VIP and then we drove over it with a car. And we've just done another one with a bottle of whiskey.
Really?
Yes.
Did it crack?
Nope, nothing.
Wow. That's amazing. I ridiculously, I'm thinking about all these things that I can pop in a pad now to drive over to see if it works. Like,
and
goodness me.
Yes, Mara's had great fun. She's brilliant at all that sort of thing. I use one in my, I have a 25-year-old Land Rover, which I drive around the farm. and I have a VIP mm. that because the seat's not very comfortable, and I sit on it. I sit on a VIP.
Amazing.
There you go.
Amazing. Oh, gosh. Right. Okay. I need some of these then. So how can I, if I don't want to wait for the competition, how can I actually buy one?
Just head on to the website or from your local stockist.
Okay. So we can head to your website and buy on there. Great. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. From your point of view then, you're in France, you've got this study, you've got a lot going on and you've got children as well. I mean, are you going to rest at any point, Amanda? Or are you enjoying this far too much?
I love my life. I don't have a huge amount of money or anything like that, but I have a very rich life and I'm very happy, and I don't feel like I need a holiday. I'm very happy here.
You are lucky, everything that we aspire to be. So I'm going to get going and start working really hard so that I can buy my little shack in France and turn my caravan into a beautiful home. It's been such a pleasure talking to you, Amanda. Thank you so much for joining us today. You're part of our new Facebook group, Horse Hour Horse Chat. I set that up because I just got so annoyed with being bullied and intimidated by admins on all these ridiculous social media groups that we've got, that I thought I'm just going to make one actual friendly group where people support each other rather than trying to insult each other and tell them how awful they are. And we try to provide a little bit of education as well and advice, and people can buy and sell. So have a look at horsehour-horsechat, and you kindly post things in there sometimes, so we get to learn from you all the time, which is lovely. So thank you
so much. I'm very honoured to have been asked. It's been a very entertaining hour.
Bit random, nothing like you expected.
All of the above, yes.
Well, have a really great day. Thank you for joining us, and we hope to catch you again very soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For all previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast, just head to our website, horsehour.co.uk. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Just use the normal hashtag, #HorseHour or @HorseHour. I hope you've been having fun with your horse. Do keep sharing pictures of your journeys and your stories and your videos of what you've been up to. I'd like to say a special hello to Miranda this week because she has been keeping me entertained with her pictures of her new baby horses. One's called Maya, and she's out of Jaguar's Mail, which is super exciting. So massive congratulations. And to all of you who have had foals over the last few weeks, I'm so, so pleased with you. It's just super exciting. And I can't wait to see all your photos. So please share them with me at Horse Hour. I'm at AmyStevenson1 on Twitter and, Amy Frost Photos on Instagram. And you can get me on Facebook as well. So just use #HorseHour. And what have you been up to if you don't have foals? Have you managed to get out and get some riding time in? Have you been on any hacks? There's lots of people that are doing some hacks for charity at the moment, so massive hats off to you. Do let us know what charities you're raising money for too, because if we can help be involved in that, and we can all maybe donate a pound to everybody who's doing a hackathon. Maybe if you're doing a hackathon, you could donate to somebody else's a pound, and you know, vice versa. We can keep paying this forward. If we all support each other, we can raise more money and enjoy some more time in the saddle. I hope you have a really great week with your horse. Thank you so much for listening to me ramble on the Horse Hour podcast. I'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.